This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's tempting to think of evil as an outmoded idea. It can seem like an archaic concept that should be alien to rational beings who've managed to send men to the moon and unlock the genetic code. We like to think that a modern civilized society should be able to root out or explain the seemingly inexplicable through superior reason and logic. Many regard evil as judgmental superstition. But how else do you describe slavery and the Holocaust? Wrong and wicked, even horrific, seem inadequate. Hannah Arendt famously used the term the banality of evil to describe the bureaucracy of death in Nazi Germany. President Reagan described the Soviet Union as the evil empire. After 9/11, of course, another president invoked the same sentiment, the axis of evil. In his new book, writer Lance Morrow says evil is the word we use when we come to the limits of human comprehension. Later in the program, So Big, the computer worm that spread across the internet and mutated. But first, the meaning and the nature of evil. Does evil exist in the world today? If so, can we agree on what it is? Can individuals or groups or nations be fairly described that way? Or is one man's evil another man's good? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, totn@npr.org. Lance Morrow joins us now from our bureau in New York. He's best known as a writer and essayist for Time magazine. His new book is called Evil, An Investigation, and it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
While you were writing this book, you described going around and asking people if they knew anybody they considered to be evil. And eventually you came to the conclusion that you were asking kind of the wrong question. You should have asked, is this an evil world? So is it?
Well, the reason I decided that was the wrong question was that I think I was conceiving of it in the wrong way. I think it's wrong to say, is so-and-so evil or not evil, or is it just one man's evil is another man's hero or something like that. I came in the process of thinking about this book to believe that evil comes and goes, and it may make an appearance. There are many different metaphors that I sort of played with to try to understand it, but it comes and goes. If you talk about Rwanda in 1994, mm-hmm. you're speaking of unspeakable acts. You're referring to unspeakable acts there that were done by fairly ordinary people and for all I know, fairly good people under other circumstances, but they were seized by an evil that was so powerful that they committed 800,000 of the most brutal kinds of murders, or death by machete and so on, the Hutu in this case slaughtering the Tutsi. That was a sort of visitation, and I came in the course of writing this book to think of evil as something like an electrical current or a force of that kind that would come and go. I mean, you might, everybody seems to agree that Hitler was evil. Everybody mm-hmm. seems to agree that Stalin was evil. But otherwise, it seems to me that what happens is that evil wanders. It's a little like the beginning of the Book of Job, that wonderful description in the opening scene of the Book of Job, where God and Satan, or the tempter, are in conversation, and God says, well, where have you been? And he said, well, I've been around. I've been here and there, up and down the world, and so on, wandering. And it also is it refers a little bit to the model of demonic possession. In other words, someone like the innocent little girl in The Exorcist mm-hmm. could be overtaken by demons, as sort of the classical possession by demons. So I thought that question that I started by asking, do you know anyone who is evil, was kind of the wrong emphasis, was not getting at the right thing there.
Mm. You express a lot of incredulity at the beginning of your book that in a century where we saw the mechanized mass death of the First World War, and of course the Holocaust in the Second, began with the Armenian genocide.
Yeah,
so much has gone on. that the idea of evil could have fallen out of favor somehow. How do you think that happened?
Well, it is extraordinary that we could finish the 20th century and believe in anything except evil. I mean, the history of the 20th century is a pretty dismal one, and Samantha Power did a wonderful job of that book of hers about genocide that appeared last year, and she started with the Armenian and went through the Holocaust and so on up through Pol Pot and Rwanda and so on. The record was so horrific that one would think that it would be firmly fixed in our mind. What William James called the evil facts would be so firmly fixed in our minds that we would not believe in anything else. But I think that we are rational, and the more enlightened we become or think of ourselves as being, we isolate a problem and we think that we can correct it. I mean, we now have a genome project in which we can correct conceivably anything, any defect, any birth defect, any insanity, any impulse to murder, and so on. I think it's something of a delusion. I think that evil is more persistent than the enlightened mind thinks it is, and I think it's an error and a danger for the enlightened mind simply to turn its back on the possibility that such a thing as evil exists, because we have seen too much of it, and we know its dangers. Now, it also is absolutely important always to bear in mind that you must be very, very careful about the way you use the word evil, because, of course, one of evil's techniques is to declare a certain people to be evil. And then once you have done that, you've dehumanized them and you have made it permissible to slaughter them. When Hitler wrote Mein Kampf in the 20s when he was in jail, his whole project was to describe the Jews as evil. And then Goebbels in the 30s in his propaganda and all the Nazi propaganda was libeling Jews endlessly as being evil, so that out of that, Auschwitz became possible. So it's very important to use the word with enormous care. But nevertheless, I think it's foolish to turn one's back on the possibility that this is a very powerful thing in the world. We have seen that it is.
You describe evil acts, Auschwitz, Hiroshima, we are familiar with those. You describe evil men, again, Hitler, Stalin, again, we're all familiar with those. But the word itself, how do you define it?
I would start by saying, by referring to the mysterium iniquitatis, which is the old theological term for the mystery of evil. It is a mystery, and mysteries cannot be precisely defined. You can describe it, you can know it by its works, but I think you have to bear in mind something that Jung said, which I quote in my book. I said, Jung said, paradox is one of our most valuable spiritual possessions, while uniformity of meaning is a sign of weakness. Hence, a religion becomes inwardly impoverished when it loses or waters down its paradoxes. But their multiplication enriches, because only the paradox comes anywhere near to comprehending the fullness of life. Non-ambiguity and non-contradiction are one-sided and thus unsuited to express the incomprehensible. Well, evil is essentially incomprehensible, I think. It's real definition and source, I suppose, is hidden from us. But we can certainly describe it, and we can, it has a quality of perverse magic about it, in the sense of now you see it, now you don't. But the fact that we don't understand it, and the fact that now you see it, now you don't, doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And I think it's a delusion of the rational mind, the optimistic rational Enlightenment mind, to think that you can eradicate this too quickly. I wouldn't be too quick with it, because it has a way of defeating our expectations. The entire history of the Third Reich is an immense, horrible sermon on. It's about the people of one of the highest civilizations the planet has produced, the people of Beethoven and Mozart and Schiller and Goethe and so on, producing unspeakable horror. And this was quite a surprise. And I think that for that reason and for many others that we now see closer to our own age, it would be foolish not to think about it and to look at it.
Let's get listeners involved. Ralph joins us on the line from Portland, Oregon.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I think that evil is something that is a judgment that we make, and it's not a fact like an it that exists out in the world, and that when we do make that judgment, we create a conflict, an us versus them thing, when we jump right into in the aftermath of something that happens and say that's evil. If we stick with just what happened and deal with the facts of the matter, we have a much better chance of moving forward and resolving.
So an element of human nature and not an agency of itself?
I wouldn't even say myself that it's an element of human nature. I think it's something that we make up to describe our parts of our nature, but evil as a fact, I don't think exists.
Evil as a fact doesn't exist.
No.
Judgment,
and that's something we come up with, but it's not like a naturally occurring thing in the world.
Lance Morrow, this definition is something you struggle with in the book. The idea of whether it is a separate agency, and in some respects you think it is, or at least you describe it that way.
Yeah, I think that I take the caller's point, and it's a civilized point of view. But I don't think what he just said is in any way adequate to cope with what we see. I think that that's the. I don't believe that that deals with evil at all, and there are certain things that one must describe as he. It's a matter of language. He says it's a matter of it's just a question of what judgments we make. Well, okay, how does one?
That would be. Can there be any evil without us human beings describing it as evil?
Ah, well, that's okay, but perhaps, but so what? I mean, the fact that we describe it as evil doesn't mean that we merely describe it as evil doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. I mean,
well, I don't think the term is worthless, but I think that there's a danger in the way that we use it that we should be careful.
I have just said that there is a very great danger in the way that we use it, and I would be very, very careful about the way that people use it, because it has been used to accomplish terrible evil.
Ralph, thanks very much for the call. And we're going to have more on evil when we come back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking with author Lance Morrow about the term evil. Is it a throwback to the Middle Ages, or does it have a place, a living place, in the modern world? Of course, you're invited to join our discussion. The phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Lance Morrow was with us from our bureau in New York, and in his book, Evil, an Investigation, Lance Morrow writes, "The disparity between visions of America as all good and America as all evil, a moral disjunction begun in the 60s during Vietnam and the civil rights movement, has gone global and lends a curious danger totalism to discussion of world affairs now. It's difficult to discuss the most powerful nation in the world, the American hyperpower, in dispassionate terms, with nuance. Great power in another makes others angry." You write that people in this country, for the first time in the past, 40 years since Vietnam, I guess, are beginning to question whether America is evil.
Yeah, I write a bit about the fact that, World War II was the quote, good war, and Vietnam was widely perceived as a war that was at least the mistaken war, but perhaps also the more than the bad war, an evil war. So things like My Lai, for example, during the 60s, of course, there was a tremendous amount of alienation of people from their government and from the country itself, from the idea of America, and people were equating it with Nazi Germany and spelling America with a K and so on.
Just saw Kathy Boudin get parole yesterday, yeah.
Yeah. And now in Iraq you talk to an awful lot of Americans who make almost an assumption that the country is evil. One thing I wanted to or is capable of great evil. They're sort of Skitzian about it, which, again, seems to me a reflection of the 60s. I think our current period has got a lot of 60s vibrations running through it. But it seemed to me, one of the points I wanted to make in my book is that the globalization has given evil a whole new dimension, and that the miniaturization of instruments of mass destruction, leaving entirely aside the question of what Saddam had, but just the possibilities of suitcase bombs, of somebody coming through with a briefcase full of anthrax or smallpox or sarin or any of these other instruments of very widespread destruction, and eventually presumably a suitcase nuclear weapon. This has changed the possibilities of evil, in my view. It has made the made it possible to deliver very large destructive evil any place in the world, as we saw on September 11th, and as is quite clear from all the anxiety that we suffer now. So whether there's an axis of evil, what I say in the book is that there is certainly a new ambience of evil.
And that, you write, makes it imperative for us to come to a consensus, sort of a global agreement on what evil is. But
yeah,
that, on the other hand, becomes extremely difficult. You have different cultures. Various people see things very differently.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what we're looking at now so much, and it has to do with the way that, Hitler was able to say the Jews are evil, and Auschwitz resulted. If you have cultures that say America is evil, America is the great Satan, or if you have America saying, Muslims are evil or some other people are evil, if you have that kind of use of the word, of course it's extremely dangerous, and you may, because of the power and the globalization and the global range of these instruments of destruction, you may have apocalyptic results in a way that was not possible before. Before, geography tended to limit the range of evil smiting, and even though, of course, we had great destruction without these things, but now we have an extraordinary democratization of the instruments. Anybody can get on a plane with a suitcase, and we're going nuts trying to screen them to keep them from getting on the planes. But the borders are so porous, and the miniaturization of these weapons is such that it really democratizes the possibilities of evil, and that is one of the reasons it seems to me we need at least to think about what this word means and what it is, and is it part of human nature? Is it something intrinsic in the world? Is it a separate agency altogether, or just what is it? Because its potential now is something it has never been before.
Let's get a call. Alan joins us on the line from Denver, Colorado.
Yes, good afternoon, Neil. I was wondering if your guest, Mr. Morrow, could comment on the supposition that there really is no such thing as evil, but in fact it is only the absence of goodness, in the sense that if there's a dark corner in the room, it's not darkness that has encroached, it is light, which is simply not present there.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the most fascinating lines of speculation, and it seems to me that there is truth in that. However, your question assumes that the negative is simply a non-thing, and my point would be that there's a great deal of theological speculation to this effect too. That the negative is actually a force in itself, in the way that a vacuum is a force, in the way that I get lost in the physics of these things, but that a black hole, or in other words, that the very negativity, the very absence that you speak of, is itself a very powerful force. We know that evil. It's clear to me that evil is a very powerful thing. Whether it is the absence of good, I'm unequipped to say, except that I do know that the relationship between good and evil in the world is what causes time and history and event and, in other words, good and evil, I do believe, are in a struggle with one another, and that out of this struggle comes our history and our stories. Evil is always a story, by the way. And out of this process of good and evil encountering one another comes whatever we make of history.
Always a story. Explain that.
Well, evil is always a story, in the sense that evil, if you can't think of evil except as something happened, right? Something. I mean, Auschwitz is a story. Pol Pot is a story.
It's not intent, then. It's an event.
Evil, well, it's an interesting sort of theological speculation. If you have evil intent but there is no event, has there been evil? I would say the evil consists in the acting out. The evil consists in the event. I would say that if you had a little man named Pol Pot who was dreaming evil dreams but never did anything about it, then that would be inconsequential. But you had the killing fields. You had the terrible, terrible events of Cambodia under the regime of the Khmer Rouge. That is the story. Mm-hmm. That was the playing out. Rwanda is the playing out of that. The terrible business in Sierra Leone, where the children's arms and hands were hacked off by the guerrilla fighters and so on, without any reason. I mean, it makes you weep for the human race. But that's a story. That's a So I would say that's what I meant by evil is always a story. It always is it's a playing out of the force or the impulse.
Let's get another phone call. Sorry to cut you off there. Roberta is on the line with us from Bonita Springs in Florida.
Hi,
you're on the air, Roberta.
Oh, thank you so much. My question that I came in my head is, are there evolutionary aspects to evil in an historical sense, but also possibly in a spiritual sense, prior to the birth of Christ? I mean, do these periods of acting out, do they go back further than our present discussion?
I don't know if I've understood your question correctly, but it seems to me that the thing to be said about evil is that it evolves. Yes, it does evolve, and it adapts. It is always characteristic of the people and the places in which it is enacting itself. To go again to Nazi Germany, because it's sort of the baseline of 20th century evil. That was the evil done under the Third Reich, under Hitler, was entirely characteristic of the industrial civilization. It was bureaucratic, it was systematic, it was industrial. Each society, I think, has a characteristic evil. So it evolves in that sense. The evil that we're talking about now enacts itself. If you will allow that September 11th was an evil act, and I would certainly say the result was terribly evil. There you have airplanes being used, and so you have the dimensions of. You have the evil using the means at hand and the characteristics of the time. Now, I'm not quite sure I got your question about the farther reaches of history, or what you were getting at when you mentioned
the French Revolution, or
fiction, or I'm sorry, the what?
The French Revolution, or the concept of crucifying, or
yeah. Yeah. Well, that sort of goes along with what I just said, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. It does. Yeah, and yeah. It makes it so it's hard to articulate what I think you're trying to say, and
I'm doing my best.
Well, he also takes, 258 pages to say it. So
I'm asking for some form of seminal hope also.
Ah, his last chapter is titled Hope, so let's talk about that for a moment, Lance Morrow.
Sure. I talk about hope and the possibilities of hope. I believe ultimately that the antidote to evil is love, which is an extremely powerful and I think the most powerful force, and I don't mean it in a gooey sort of way. It is absolutely effective against evil, even though evil is immensely powerful. Hope is a little tricky because I tell the story, for example, of in the Warsaw Ghetto. Adam Chernyakov was the head of the Judenrat, the Jewish Council, and he. A lot of the people in the Warsaw Ghetto for a long time were hoping. They had a kind of poisoned hope that they would be spared, or it wouldn't be as bad as they thought, and that they had special passes, so they would be okay, even if other people weren't, and so on. And there was a hope that was false and destructive, and it was only really when they gave up hope that they began to fight back a bit. But I think hope is absolutely essential. Hope hope is much more dynamic word, for example, than good. Good has always got a certain, vanilla quality about it, or it's a bland it isn't really, but it has a kind of bland quality. If you know, in the famous case of John Milton's Satan is more interesting, so many people have said, than John Milton's God in Paradise Lost, because evil is more interesting somehow than good. But hope has got a dynamic quality and an energy, which, and it moves through time. It's in other words, it's good is a sort of a outside time somehow, but hope is enacting itself inside time and struggling.
Lance Morrow is our guest. He's with us from our bureau in New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we just have a couple of minutes left, but I have to get to the questions of, you know, is evil, if it exists, is it something we have to learn to live with? And does the existence of evil justify evil to attack it? I mean, you know, the sort of reciprocal nature of evil.
Yeah. Well, I think, as I say, it demands such enormous care when you start talking about that, doing those to whom evil is done do evil in return, and tit-for-tat evil, of course, is terribly dangerous and destructive. Whether we're going to live with it forever, I suspect that it's a pretty much a fixture in human nature. I'm fascinated by the idea that the Human Genome Project could somehow, in the fullness of time, edit out all of our evil impulses. Could they? I mean, I have read a fantasy, a sort of science fiction fantasy, in which we would all be transplanted to a more permanent container, a sort of I don't know what it would be made of, molybdenum or something, and then our brains and everything would be installed therein, presumably for the length of life of this permanent container. But if such a project were undertaken, would they be trying to edit out the impulse, anger, for example? Would anger go? Would be anger be the first thing to go? Would hatred go? What would the result be, and what would we be left with if we suppose that all the and what are the uses? It's obviously the human mind and soul are so complicated that you're dealing in the realm of fantasy when you talk about these things. But my suspicion in the short run, barring all this, is that it is a fixture of the world, and that we should be a little more candid about looking at it and recognizing it in ourselves, and recognize the potential of evil in our own natures, which is really the deepest truth of this, that we are all capable of these things.
Lance Morrow, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Lance Morrow, joining us from our bureau in New York. His new book is Evil, An Investigation. When we come back from a short break, we're going to be talking about So Big, the computer worm that is mutating. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.